justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups. The police who investigate crimes and the district attorney who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. Oh, sorry, that was the wrong podcast.
Dun, dun.
Sorry, guys. thanks for joining us for another edition of the Stack Pack. We're back with another episode for your heads. Yeah, today we're going to be covering Season 5, Episode 8.
Oh, that's so funny.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, there's some podcasts I haven't listened to yet, but apparently it's all about SVU, and they go over the real crimes that they're all inspired by.
Oh, the ones that inspired? Yeah, because they take real crimes and...
That's a lot of podcasts. Like, that show's been on for, like, 20-something years.
Wow. Mariska Hargitay, man.
Yeah.
She's still a babe.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We watched a newer episode not that long ago, Dan and I.
It was awkward.
It was awkward. Why was it awkward? Because Ice-T's also...
Awkward.
Yeah. It just felt so cheap.
Looks like you're talking to Ice-T.
It's like the cameras are so good, but the show just feels cheaper because the technology is better and you just see how corny it is. I don't know.
Oh, what made it awkward was there was like no consistency. Like, you know.
How do you mean?
So, like, there would be, like...
Like, continuity errors and stuff?
Well, yeah, like continuity errors, but especially because, you know, they're now shooting during the pandemic. So, there would be, like, one scene where they were, like, filming inside, like, the police precinct and everyone's wearing masks. And then, like...
And then they're outside talking to a suspect and nobody's wearing a mask.
So, like, for example, like, my favorite is they're in the bullpen and... No one's wearing a mask. And then they get called into the captain's office. And then everyone in the captain's office is wearing a mask. And it's just like...
Yeah, it's like, pick a lane here, people.
It's the same fucking building, like...
Superstore has kind of been like that a little bit, too.
It has. I did notice that. Like, sometimes they'll be wearing their masks, and then
That's like a comedy or, like, a farce. Like, it's not supposed to be, like, taken serious. But, like...
Yeah.
Law and Order, you're just like,
Yeah, I could see that.
It's like this random person off the street is telling you they saw something. Like, you should probably be wearing a mask around them.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to add. Perhaps you can help us solve a mystery.
Oh, yeah. Help us solve a mystery. Aliens today.
Aliens? Missing persons?
A fun Polish man had a little alien encounter.
Oh, this guy's so fun.
I love him. French-Canadian.
He lived in Canada, but they came from Poland.
And he speaks so many languages.
Oh, yeah, of course. He's full. I mean, most Europeans do. We're all doo-doo brains compared to.
Yeah, because we could barely speak English, right? We could barely talk in English, yeah.
And we're like, and then some Americans are like, speak English. It's your responsibility. Speak English.
Hey,
like,
we're in America.
Oh, shut up.
We're in America.
Yeah.
We speak American.
You don't speak Spanish, right? Or.
Muy poquito. You know why? My mom told me.
Because so I got Stone?
No, I got very frustrated with my parents because now that I'm older, I wish I did speak Spanish. It'd be great to be able to speak multiple languages. Well.
Did your brother speak Spanish?
Yeah, he did.
Like, no problem?
Yeah, no problem. But he also worked as a teenager. He worked helping my uncle lay carpet. So he got to work around.
Damn, that's pretty sick, bro.
No. He used to be able to. That was his first job. He
went out as a teenager. Carpet, laid
carpet. Really, actual carpet. And he had to work with a bunch of Hispanics.
It was the 1980s, man. a lot more carpet. Now it's just smooth tile.
Everybody's got that smooth tile. Everybody
or that hardwood floor.
No, it's just ceramic or laminate.
The reason I asked my mom, I said, Mom, why didn't you speak Spanish to me? Like, what was the big deal? Well, apparently when she was younger, her and my dad, the teachers used to get mad at the students for speaking Spanish because this is America. And so my mom, thinking that it was not, that I was going to have a hard time in school. She's like, I don't need to teach him Spanish because they're not going to let him speak it.
Huh.
Racist.
That's weird. Well, I remember, of course, when you're kids, there was the ones that were the bilingual kids is what they called them, but but they really weren't. They were the ones who could really speak Spanish way better, and their English was limited. Yeah, that was like
their first language.
Hey, did you hear about the bilingual kids?
Well, you know what's stupid is we used to call them the Mexican kids, and everybody was Mexican except for me because I was white. But
Mexican kids.
Yeah,
everyone. Well, because they only spoke Spanish.
We would call them the Spanish kids.
Oh, this.
We would call them the Spanish kids. This is all the Hispanic kids and me. I was the only white kid, but we call them the Spanish kids. But it was because they spoke only Spanish.
Yeah.
Not because they were from Spain.
And there wasn't much crossover. And it was like all the kids were Mexican. You know, they were all, you know, like Hispanic. Yeah. So it's it was just like funny. Like, oh, we don't talk to those kids.
We don't speak Mexican.
Yeah.
I get it.
Kids, but shut up. I'm Mexican.
They really didn't. They really discouraged kids from speaking Spanish.
Well,
which is crazy.
Well,
if you think about it.
But with the kids, with the kids that were mainly speaking Spanish at the time, the goal was half of the class was them learning English, so they could transition and.
Shouldn't that have been the case for us? Like. I mean, I would have loved to speak Spanish. They didn't
You know how it works. It's like the 2 credits in high school that you need. And it's like, that shit doesn't teach you a language. But what's funny is like my cousins who, moved to France, they're like teenagers. They moved to France and they had to learn another language. And they're like, well, your French is too good. That doesn't, you know, obviously you're in a French school and you know English and you know Spanish. So they were learning German and he was like literally – he was actually picking it up. Like he's – you know, he was getting good at it. And it's like that's not how it is in America. In America, it's just like, well, yeah, I'll take Spanish just because like, you know.
I have to.
Because I can order off a menu or I got to take something, you know. Yeah. Like I can't take Latin. But like in Europe, it's like, oh, no, you could probably actually learn a bunch of languages, especially when you're that young, right?
Yeah, your mind is
I don't know what the fuck I don't know what we're talking about.
We got onto this because we were talking about a Polish man who speaks multiple languages who has an encounter with an alien.
Oh yeah, okay, awesome. And this Polish guy is a hoot. And
he's great.
I can't wait to get into his story. We have a lot of
a character. He's an actual character.
Oh yes. I want to point out that we have a lot of. Reenactments today that are just people not saying anything but reacting in very funny ways.
I didn't notice that.
The first one is the very beginning of this. Let me get into it.
Now that you mentioned it, I'm kind of remembering now.
Well, the first one is when this man's in the woods and he reacts to a bunch of geese. Like he hears something. And I looked and it was just a bunch of geese. And then he just looks and he's like, oh, like he just shrugs it off and just makes such a like, oh, you silly goose.
You silly geese.
Yes, exactly. It's hard to explain the funniness of the look, but it was very cartoony. It was like, oh, I'm not going to have any words. So I better make my body language say exactly what I'm thinking.
You can't get any more cartoony than this UFO that they show.
Yeah. So, of course, obviously, this case is unexplained. This episode originally aired November 4th of 1992. And we're talking about Mr. Stephen Michalak. He lived in Manitoba, Canada, but he was from Poland. He moved there after World War II, and he was a mechanic at a cement plant.
So is that why he was out in the woods and like just stumbling across geese with a?
It says he was snooping in the rocks.
Yeah, he says snooping, and Robert Stack called him a rock hound. He has a lot of funny words and sayings. He loved nature and birds and the rocks. He liked to snoop around snooping in the rocks. So on his long weekends, he would go up and, you know, into the forest
and just creep on rocks.
Yeah. Voyeur, just watch the rocks from afar. Jacket.
David, he was an industrial mechanic.
He was an industrial mechanic at a cement place, right? I knew there was like one word in front of mechanic plant. That made it like way more legit. Like,
yes. industrial.
It's an industrial mechanic at a cement place.
So he only worked on diesel engines.
So he was making some money.
I don't know.
He was a rock hound.
And
is that why he worked at a cement plant?
Yeah.
That so makes he could sense. Sustain his fetish?
Well, he was like, this way I can create rocks, kind of. So anyway, May 20th of 1967, 100 miles east of Winnipeg, he's snooping on rocks when he hears geese make an unusual sound.
And then it says he said himself he loves birds and nature.
Fucks with birds and nature.
Ew.
He fucks birds and nature.
You heard the with. Don't be immature. We're adults. He loves it.
Barely.
He loves nature. And he was snooping on rocks. He heard some geese. He was like, what the heck is that? Bigfoot? And then he saw the geese and he shrugged it off. But then he looked up in the sky and what the geese.
And then he says, what the hell is that?
Yeah. And then what he actually sees in the sky, what the geese were swarming away from, was a cigarette-like fucking ship with a lump in the middle.
It's interesting that he used the word cigarette-like.
Right? And then because he drew it, and in the reenactment, it just looks like a UFO.
Yeah, it doesn't look anything like a cigarette.
Can we take a moment and say bravo to the graphics department on this episode? Oh, yeah.
What did you guys say last week? They went in and did a job.
They showed up to work that day.
By the way, I didn't realize the inside of a UFO looked like a
Power Rangers stripper.
No, it looked like a stripper's like a what do you call those? A gentleman's club?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was center stage at Centerfolds.
To me, it looked like okay.
I don't know. I've never been in one, so I wouldn't know. Just from movies and stuff.
I'll meet you halfway. It looked like a strip club, but like that Zordon from the Power Rangers could attend.
I could see that. Like he's in the middle.
Did you see like the beam in the middle?
What would be really funny is if we could, doctor the footage to make it look like, you know, the inside of that ride that they used to be at amusement parks that spun really fast. If inside he looks in and it's just a bunch of kids like strapping themselves into against the wall ready to spin.
Oh, like, he just got fucked up and stumbled upon the UFO carnival ride.
Yeah.
So he sees two of these things in the sky. One lands and he approaches it. And he's looking for logos. He doesn't see NASA or any country flags or anything. But he assumes that it's the Americans because, you know, UFOs. And his stepson, Stan, is also telling us a lot of the story because he was 10 at the time and he remembers the experience pretty well. He said that the surface of the UFO was flawless. Like it had been manufactured, but it was like steel. And and after a few moments, the gate opened, and he heard, and what he heard was goody 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 goody.
I had a bit.
Goody goody goody.
I was gonna say like so it opened up, and what he heard was, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, grab your dollar and get ready to holler. Up next on the main stage is Bleep Blorp.
It's an alien strip club.
It's an alien strip club."
But he said goody goody. Like, did you catch that? Like,
yeah, you did.
Like,
goody, 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 goody.
Like, little kids were dealing with a problem. like the Sandlot. He opened the door and the Sandlot was trying to, like, get their Babe Ruth ball back from across, you know, the...
From yeah. Fang.
That's what I got out of it. And then he said, Yankee boy, seems to be you are in trouble. Yankee boys.
Yeah. Why did he say Yankee boys?
That's so Yankee funny. Boys.
Because Americans are Yankees.
Yeah.
So he says that. It says that he spoke in German.
He tries Russian.
Yeah.
And then he goes, Svetka. And they don't respond. Svetka is a Swedish vodka, by the way. I know. Don't at me. And then he tries Polish, his native tongue. And then he tries German. He says, Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
And then he looks into the door where that's when he sees the weird cylinder thing where Zordon is getting a lap dance. And he says he has to.
Oddly enough, what was the stupid robot's name?
Alpha.
Alpha. Yeah. Alpha's actually the one doing the stripping.
Oh, I can see
just that. Just robot parts everywhere.
Nice.
So nuts, bolts.
So it was so bright at the alien strip club that he had to flip down his visor and put on the safety goggles that he had to peek at rocks. I don't know. But he had safety, like welding goggles, you know, like a visor, like intense. So after that, it closes, right? Like the thing, the door closes and it knocks him back and it kind of turns counterclockwise. And this great, like, as like kind of blows fire at him.
Yeah. And he caught fire.
It sets his shirt on fire. The reenactment's so goofy.
It is goofy. It's funny.
And then he's like, for me, that was time that I thought I should buzz off.
Buzz off. Yeah.
This European man.
His wording is just amazing. It's great.
Yeah. Like he clearly had a lot of normal Americans around him, or I guess suburban Canadians around him. Like,
what it really
telling
was,
him to buzz off.
What it really was is he watched 16 hours of MTV before this interview.
Music television, yeah?
I saw a super funny meme today that it was like, MTV turns 40. Thank you for 14 years of music television. Yeah, 14 years of
music television. I've seen that too.
That was pretty funny. It's not often that a meme makes me go, ha!
LOL, keep scrolling.
And yet they still film music videos.
Yeah, for the YouTube. Not for you, not for MTV. Yeah, so it was
now time. They just rerun Jersey Shore.
Oh, no, it's called Jersey Shore Family Vacation, where they all go to another place.
And be jerks.
And now they're like approaching 40, so it's like way less cute. it wasn't from the beginning, but it's it way cute less then. Cute. Yeah. So after that, he thinks he's going to buzz off, but. He has, like, his vision is, like, all fucked up. There's, like, spots everywhere. And
he has spots on his – oh, we'll talk about
and
that.
And in the reenactment, he's, like – well, his shirt burned off, so he has no shirt. And
yeah, he's stumbling.
He's, like, stumbling like a Neanderthal like, away.
He's drunk.
Whoa.
Like a drunk. Looks like,
why do you have to make
it looks like political? A drunk David on New Year's Eve.
Just – is like
where's the bathroom?
Is like disoriented and like yeah, like walking with the front of part of his body.
That was actually his audition tape for The Walking Dead. True story. Yeah,
coincidentally.
So he was like
before
he had bad burns on his chest, and they were like weird circular shapes, right? Like a circular pattern that matched the grate on the UFO, and he drew the UFO.
My question is like, how are they able to match, like, the burns on him to, like, the grate on the UFO?
Oh, yeah, I know. He just drew it.
He just drew like, it. Well, no, it was the sun. It's not like it was an expert saying. It was the sun saying it.
But still, he was able to draw it himself, and he could see the burns. He's like, I'm going to put lights here.
Yeah, it's science. It's science. So the doctors didn't know what the hell was wrong with him. He was nauseous and... And he had to go to the hospital. His son also said that he smelled like shit, like sulfuric shit.
Yeah, he was out there for what, like 8 hours, I think, right? He said he was lost.
It took him 9 hours to get back.
He was just sleeping in a pile of sulfuric shit. Alien dookie. So he was in bed for a couple of weeks after, too. He was always sick. And he came back negative for radiation tests. He thought he might have some sort of radiation. But apparently it turned out that it was like a chemical burn. After he got a little better, 6 weeks later, him and a buddy go out there to look at the area. And he sees like a circle of dead shit. And some of the trees have like broken off branches that look like burned, you know, like oddly, weirdly missing. And he's like, I knew it. I'm not crazy.
I told you.
Truth be told, these were the early tests of Elon Musk's Starship.
When he was like 3 years old.
How old would he have been? Yeah, he would have been really
like
young.
Negative. I think Elon Musk is only like 45, 43, 45.
Oh, this is in the 60s. Yeah, never mind. Yeah, he's not even fucking born yet. Yeah, so scientists went out there. The Canadian science community was like, okay, what the fuck's going on?
Well, they said that his story hit the paper, right? It like landed on the front.
Yeah, it was immediately a big thing in the paper. And once they went out there, like people checked it out and they said that they were able to find out that there was a vein of radium under the ground in that area. Yeah.
This is some Ghostbusters shit, like going down and finding the slime underneath
Manhattan.
Going to the painting. He wants to steal a baby.
The second one. I always forget about that one. Oh, gosh. Yeah, so the doctors didn't know what was going on because 3 weeks later, his weird circular burn things like flared up again. And the doctors were confounded. They were flabbergasted and bamboozled. And
that's the marks you get when you sleep with an alien stripper.
He shouldn't have taken that lap dance. Like, it wasn't for human skin.
Yeah.
She's got to like put the suckers on you when she straddles you. It doesn't mess with any usual other alien skins, but it fucks with humans.
You know, I don't know why I just got reminded of that movie we watched, that great one where they show the alien, where he gets abducted by aliens.
Fire in the Sky.
Oh, man. That was great.
Yeah, I liked that
movie. I loved it. That was a good scene.
One of these experts or UFO people that tells us about this guy's story tells us that you can still go up to Steven
and smell the sulfur. And
smell the shitty sulfur. No, not go up to him, but you could still feel the button scars. He calls them his buttons.
He still smells like shit to this day.
He blames the UFOs. I think he just doesn't want to wipe his ass.
We just put him in a home and we just don't go visit him anymore because he smells terrible.
You know what they say about Polish people?
That they make good sausage.
Insert 1970s Polish joke. I don't know. A year after he goes back again. There's all these stories. Okay. He goes back again and that's when they find this weird ass metal there, right? They found molten rock that was quite radioactive. That's how they describe it. They said it was an extremely pure type of silver that was coated in something called pitch blend ore. And this stuff is half it contains radium and uranium, so highly volatile and radioactive. But experts they came to the conclusion that it was, planted. They don't think the scientific community, the people that were there the year before would have missed that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that they say that there's no way they could have missed that.
Yeah, because he like basically goes there with a Geiger counter, him and his friend, and then it spikes, and then they just dug a little bit and found this odd piece of metal. Yeah, it's funny, the one UFO guy is like, I think it was planted, but I don't think it was, I don't think it was Steven. I didn't say that. But I think it was.
So he thinks somebody else put that there?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm not saying he's a liar because I like UFOs. But I think this was planted. Interesting story. This is solved. They found the alien ship.
It's no longer missing.
Yeah.
They took Zordon into custody as well as with Alpha. They're now serving 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, it turns out it was an illegal operation. You can't you can't make portable alien strip clubs.
They buried them underneath Mount Rushmore.
There's lots of restrictions. Coming to Earth also violated a lot of the intergalactic strip club laws that they had. Entering other atmospheres.
But didn't they give not an update, but they didn't they say what happened to Mr. Mikulak? I thought they said what ended up happening to him.
He Richard Dreyfussed it. The alien ship came back and he jumped on it like the end of Close Encounters and he was like, "Peace out, Canada."
He's like, for a second I thought buzz you off. Were going to say he for a second I thought you were going to say he, like some I thought you said when you said Richard Dreyfuss, I thought you were going to say something about Richard Gere where he stuck a hamster in his ass.
Richard Gere, yeah, he did do that allegedly.
Some kinky stuff, man. I ain't one to judge.
When you said Richard Gere, I thought you were going to do like a stripper, like Pretty Woman type thing. It's like he met a nice alien. He bought it a nice dress, turned its life around.
And then the alien went back to the shop that turned her away when she was an alien stripper. And said, yeah. You work on commission?
It works yeah. great with the, Big with mistake. The alien stripper.
Huge. I see why you thought I was going there.
That's great.
Big mistake. Huge.
I've never seen that movie.
It's good. I just picture Richard Gere at the end going like this outside of the alien ship.
It's just like the fucking goddamn Always Sunny where they do that. The fucking... That
oh, the Frank's Pretty Woman?
Jack is titling dick scan.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite. Oh, I got money. Holy shit. Hey, man, fuck your dick skin jacket.
Fuck your dick skin jacket.
She spills like peach schnapps on it.
We've said tighter than dick skin on this podcast before.
We could get crack from Roxy.
Oh, my God. Frank's Pretty Woman. Yeah. Actually, we watched
that. I'm still going to pay you. The last but time. I want you to stop banging other dudes. What do you say? You want to do this or what?
It's funny that Danny DeVito's like a multimillionaire.
Yeah. He's got his own wine. His Instagram used to be, he used to do troll foot. It would just be his foot in everywhere. He would like wear Crocs and then like he'd go to a winery and then like put his foot in the picture. Like you know how people like take really nice like pictures like sunsets? He would just put his foot in the sunset and take the picture and he would do hashtag trollfoot.
God, he's cool. And dude, he was on Taxi. Being, like a fancy, really rich dude who just like
he's been doing it for a long time, man. Taxi, Always Sunny.
Who like for 2 months out of the year just goes and plays a wretched, vile scum of a human. Rumham.
I love them.
Toe knife.
Rumham.
You can't even say toe knife without Dan like cringing. Toe knife. Toe knife. I think that show got renewed for a couple more years. It's not going anywhere.
Oh, man. Good.
Did you ever see a Max show on Apple TV?
No. I just actually, you know, funny you mentioned that. Yesterday, I saw a trailer for it. I didn't even know it existed until yesterday.
Season 2 is coming soon.
I'm going to watch it. It looks good.
It's funny because Rob McElhenney kind of plays the same character.
Yeah.
But it's so much like sweeter. But I don't know. It's a real show.
I love it.
It's not everybody's an absolute piece of shit. Like he's kind of a megalomaniac because he's the creator of this really popular, like it's like World of Warcraft. Like he created World of Warcraft and everybody works for him and they like, you know, they're always fixing and updating the game. But the guy who plays Rickety Cricket, the guy from Good Girls.
Yeah.
He's the boss, but he knows nothing about games. He's just kind of like the financial manager and everybody pushes him around. They treat him like shit. Abed from Community plays like a complete sociopath. Like he's a dick. It's so funny to see him play that character.
Apple TV is doing some cool things, man. Like they got some really good shows out.
And then a show that Dan and I were obsessed with on Apple TV is, I think we told you to watch it with the kids, Central Park, dude.
Oh yeah. No, we haven't. I haven't done that yet.
It's a like full musical. It's like Bob's Burgers, but it's a musical. But the cast, but it's all Broadway people and shit. Like, and it's all written by Broadway writers and stuff. Like, every song is a fucking banger, dude. I'm telling you.
A banger?
Dude, I'm fucking telling you, dude.
Did you end up watching, speaking of banger musicals, did you end up watching the circus one? Greatest Showman?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it more than I thought I would, but we talked about this. I was like, my only complaint is it starts off with a 12-year-old boy, and then it cuts immediately to him as a 50-year-old man. Yeah,
you're right. I forgot. It's like, what happened?
It's just me talking shit about Hugh Jackman.
He just gets
being
married.
Old.
That's right. I do remember.
Yeah, it's good.
But okay, Central Park. But anyways, back to Unsolved. This is an Unsolved Mysteries podcast, guys. I don't know if you know.
Yeah. So the next case is, there's only three cases. The next case is unexplained death, and it's crazy. It's about two unexplained deaths. It's about the Fonterra Women's Prison that's 40 miles south of Los Angeles. And it is not only the biggest, but houses some of the most dangerous prisoners. Well, at least it did in 1992, in November 1992. So the tease of this case is that a lady named Terry Lucas, who was an inmate, is approached. Well, she's in her cell, and this a corrections officer from another part of the jail comes in and wants to, like, talk to Terry. And it's obvious that this woman, Terry Lucas, is freaking frightened out of her mind. It's totally scared shitless. Betty Thompson's another correctional officer that was telling us the story. She was saying that Terry Lucas was a hard ass. You know, she was mean and tough. But this guard came up and she was like absolutely shitting herself.
Like, yeah, like she did like a 180, like complete character change.
Yeah. Apparently he wanted to, like, get in her cell, and he probably would have, but Betty Thompson, the cop, the other guard, the female guard who was actually in the infirmary working that area, like, stopped her from entering. And he tried to keep going, and he only stopped when Betty threatened to report him.
Yeah. And she mentioned that usually guards back other guards, but in this case she chose to protect the inmate.
Yeah, the woman, the helpless woman who was in there she was in the infirmary for, like, cancer or something? I don't know. I feel like they vaguely just go over that part.
She was in there for a cancer biopsy, so probably found a lump and didn't know what it was, so they were going to see if it
was
cancerous.
They're
going
to test it. So she talks to Terry Lucas after the guard leaves. So Terry Lucas tells the guard that she was being threatened essentially by the security guard and being told to shut the fuck up and be quiet because this inmate knew what happened to a lady named Jesslyn Rich. And Jesslyn Rich was another corrections officer, a guard at the prison, who disappeared mysteriously years later in 1984. So we're talking about two victims in this story.
Yeah. So then they talk about what happened to Jesslyn. And apparently she just went missing one night.
Yeah. She was like a good student. She was taking criminology courses, which she was getting all A's in order to, I don't know, who knows, you know, further her career in some sort of law enforcement, I'm assuming. And apparently she became very concerned with all the shady goings on of the Fonterra prison because there was a lot of drug dealing and stuff and, shady operations.
Which we know that's shady shit going down in prisons. Women's and men's, both prisons. There's corruption in there for sure.
So it's November 11th of 1984 when she's at a country bar. This is Jesslyn. She's at a country bar with her friend Marilyn and two male counterparts. And they were just having a night talking, chilling. And all of a sudden, Marilyn saw Jesslyn's face, like, just completely change when someone walked into the bar. It looked like she'd seen a ghost. Like she just completely 180'd her facial expression. Marilyn didn't look back, which is dumb, but she said that Jesslyn was looking towards the front door. She explained the look as wide and fearful.
Yeah, that's so funny. Like if somebody was looking in a direction and looked
right,
their demeanor changed, you're obviously going to see like, what are you staring at? What is it?
Yeah, I would turn the fuck around. So yeah, wide and fearful. But then she snapped back in the conversation. So I guess that's why she didn't really think anything of it. And then she got up a little bit later to use the restroom and she turned the corner to head down the hall that had the restroom, in it. And that's the last time that Marilyn or anyone for that matter, as far as we know, ever saw
Jesslyn. And it's so confusing to me that nobody like, did they not see her go out? Did they not check the bathrooms? Like,
maybe there's a back door by the bathrooms.
So I know, I think Dan has more insight on this, but
well, there's a lot more.
We're going to talk about it later. Let's talk about it at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, people immediately knew when she disappeared that this was wrong, but cops wouldn't really do anything about it. Like the family was like, okay, she had all these career aspirations and these two small kids and like, you know, she just doesn't go to work one day. She just doesn't come home one day. It just doesn't make any sense. Her brother actually started going through her trash at her home and trying to find some answers. He eventually came across a handwritten note that was torn up in little pieces that she like put back together. The brother put back together in order to read it. He immediately recognized the writing on the letter. So he knew it might have something important. And what it was, is it was a letter written between her and another guard. She wrote that she was threatened, and that anybody that was messing with this drug operation would be, quote, taken care of. Like, you can see, it shows a picture of the note, her writing, you know, they'd take care of whoever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, obviously this is a lucrative business for somebody.
Right. Getting drugs into the women's prison. It makes sense. And this is the only bit of evidence that actually corroborates there being foul play in relation to Jesslyn's disappearance, because the cops just maintain, oh yeah, she just maybe met a dude and left. But everyone's just like, no, like she had two little kids and was like getting good grades in school. And you know,
and she also didn't miss work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they said that she had only missed 3 days.
Yeah.
Or 2 days of work. Three. Yeah. Something like that. She'd only missed 2 days of work. This remains a full-blown mystery until 1987 when Terry Lucas, back to the beginning of this story, they Tarantino'd it a little bit, is telling this guard that she's being told that, like, she's being threatened because she knows what actually happened to Jesslyn Rich.
But she never gets to tell that story, right?
No, because the next morning, correctional officer Betty returns to her post at the infirmary, and she walks into the room and Terry is dead. Her breakfast is left there untouched. She goes and tells the nurses, and the nurses are like, what? Okay. You know, we'll take care of it. And sadly, it takes 3 days for them to even call the coroner.
Dude, what? That information alone stunned me. Like, they just left her there for three days?
It's so disheartening. It's just like, fucking, how disrespectful to, like, I don't know, everyone and everything. Like, it's a bummer. What's funny is the coroner, when he first got there, was like, what the fuck? Like, he found grass on her head, the grouse, and like, bruises, lots of bruises, a broken arm. One of her arms was straight up broken. And there was evidence that she was suffocated with the pillow. But then he has a little conversation with the prison officials and some higher ups, and his whole story completely changes. Basically, this guy just came back and said, all right, everything I said, we're just going to fucking lie about it.
He creates this whole narrative, right?
Yeah. We're going to say she's only been dead for 2 hours and she died because of diabetes. Which is so stupid. And there was no evidence of foul play, so that's dumb. Whatever. Then they try to convince her to, like, sign this report. And they convince, they're like, she keeps refusing. And at one point they even like write a letter for her to just sign. And then she's like, okay, fine, I'll sign. And at the bottom, she's like, this is all inaccurate. Like, you know,
I'm under duress signing this. This is not what happened.
And apparently, according to her, they eventually just forged her signature on another version of that same document. And then she started getting death threats.
Yeah.
Even before she starts getting the phone calls at that hearing, somebody just let it slide that, that she might, you know, befall the same fate as poor Jesslyn. And she said that made her burst into tears right there in the, you know, when they were interviewing her. So it's like, Jesus, crazy. Death threat calls start happening. One said, you'll end up dead alongside some muddy ditch, which is not nice. And then the smug cop lady who is like, hey, have you been getting threatening calls?
Yeah.
Like threatening your life? Like, oh, that's weird. Yeah.
Like the next time they're going to throw you in a ditch?
That's
Are you getting those too?
That's weird. God. And she didn't think like this person was being like, me too. Like this person was obviously like knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of this harassment, as Robert Stack says. They're the best mints from Harris, Texas. It's the one thing they make.
Harris mints. Today's episode is sponsored by Harris
Mint. Harris Mint. Since 1984. Not to be confused with the Harris Mint down the street that makes those fun souvenir coins. And then you could head down the street to Hair Is Mint, where you can get a fine haircut from the people down there. Hair Is Mint. So Harris Mint continues for 7 months until the culmination of all the harassments on June something of 1988, when she was straight up shot at, like, in her driveway.
Yeah, and she ducks. The reenactment shows her ducking and, like, taking cover. And then she gets a phone call.
Yeah, she calls the cops, and they're taking the police report. And then that's when she gets the phone call. It's fucking crazy. While the cop is there, the guy calls and says,
next time, we ain't gonna miss.
Yeah. And it's just like the fucking cojones, balls. Man. Yeah.
The balls on this guy.
The boleros. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? But she's still alive, so fuck those guys, right? anyway, yeah, the cop took the report and added that to the thing, but nothing. That's the end of that original story. Unsolved Mysteries never really gives us an update, right? Dan was able to find some stuff.
But Dan knows.
Yeah, and we didn't have him tell us before. Well, I mean, it's just the Unsolved Mysteries wiki, but it's new to us.
She's dead.
Well, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
That's it. That's the update.
No, wait, what's the update? Say again.
She's dead. That's it.
Oh. After the story aired, she died. Unexplained.
Just kidding. So this case is kind of solved, but unresolved. So in June of 1992, Jesslyn's remains were reportedly identified. The dismembered remains were found in San Bernardino in 1985. The police now believe that she was murdered. And then in July of 1992, Orange County Sheriff identified Jesslyn's killer as 45-year-old David Daniel Rebies, who was an ex-convict who worked at the county western bar where Jesslyn was last seen alive. He had been a suspect in the case for years, according to Jesslyn's friend Marilyn. He had been hanging around and had been flirting with Jesslyn throughout the night. An employee saw someone resembling Jesslyn laying in the back seat of his car that night. Before leaving, Rebies told a witness that Jesslyn wasn't feeling well and that he was going to take care of her. And that was the last time she was seen.
What?
So how they solved this case was in October of 1990, he suffered a heart attack, and on his deathbed, he ultimately confessed.
What? So had he said nothing, we would never know.
Correct. He was always a suspect, okay, but they could never really pin it on him.
He looks like Tom Savini, the special effects makeup god.
Let me get this straight. So her remains were found in 85.
Correct.
They didn't identify them until 92.
Correct.
Which is why they still assumed she was missing during this episode.
Correct.
Wow.
It's weird there's not an update on that.
Well, here's the crazy thing. So part of the reason why there might not be an update is because they never formally identified her via DNA.
Oh, really? What did they do?
I don't know. The article goes on to say that, you know, her daughter submitted DNA samples for them to cross-reference with the remains that they found, but they never did anything with that. Hmm. So her daughter feels like the remains that are supposedly her mom's aren't really her mom's, so therefore this case is technically unsolved.
Well, it's not unsolved. It's still unresolved.
It's refuted.
It's not completely proven.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
You know what I say?
Huh. What's that? Dig 'em
up. There you go.
there we go. Drop it in. Dig 'em up. Dig 'em up.
Dig 'em up. Dig 'em up. Well, there's a small little update that we get about a woman who was, and honestly, I kind of, when I was, if you watch the thing on mute, you don't even realize that it's a different segment because it's talking about a woman that gets put in jail. She ends up being wrongly convicted, talking to one of the guards. The guard helps her basically get out.
We covered this story.
Yeah. And all she does is
meet him. Well, we did get a little bit longer of the reunion than we saw in the earlier version when they tagged on the update. Yeah, this is this girl who somehow ended up in jail because her cop stepfather was like sexually harassing her and no one believed her and they just locked her up. And this one cop believed her and they proved it and she got released to like a foster home, I believe.
Yeah.
And so he's able to reunite with him and she gets to cook for him and she's so excited for him to eat her mac and cheese. It's really cute.
Yeah, it is cute.
But
anyways, it's just
it's sweet. Yeah. We won't get into that. But I didn't even write her name down. We covered the whole case in the previous episode. I wish we could Stan Lee it up and be like, see episode blah blah blah. But we're not that well prepared. Hey, right off the bat, I said the air date of the episode. That's something. Progress. Okay, so the last case is truly an unsolved mystery. I'll just say right off the bat. AJ Bro.
Bro.
Sup, bro?
But it's fun Cajun bro. Like he eats, I was going to say baguettes. Beignets. He eats beignets and coffee that tastes like soil.
Yeah, that's got that dirt. Straight dirt.
I believe that's called chicory.
Yeah.
It is called chicory.
Chicory.
There you go.
Chicory.
We know.
Oh, so good.
From the world famous Café Dumont.
Dumont. Yeah, that place was fun.
Well, I do declare.
That's fun. Dan and I, we had a waiter there when we went the one time, and we kept calling him our Cajun prince because he had the thickest Cajun accent and like three teeth, but he was like purebred. And then
he was the sweetest guy too.
He was nice. And then we had a really rough and tough dude who was our power. What do you call those boats?
Our fan boat driver.
And he was like he looked like if you just dusted him off, he would be like, you know, on Riverdale. Like he was the true Cajun prince. Like he had a thick accent, but he was just covered in dust.
what did he had like bad. A he had a bachelor's degree in like marine biology because he helps the zoo track like the mating rituals of alligators and their reproductive cycles. Dude, like
it's so cool. So fucking so like birds go and take out fucking crocodile eggs. And these things are so, like, endangered that these guys go and they find the crocodile eggs and they save them and they make sure that they get to baby's age and then they just release them when they're old enough. Because what? A lot of these things will, like, and if they hatch, they'll just get taken up by birds, you know, because it takes a long time for them to grow. Yeah. Because they're just a little, you know, but they live a long time and we need alligators. I don't know. It was interesting. And he was hot.
He could be my, he could be my captain.
And I'll knock the dust off that any day.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Like, it's just like a diamond.
I'd like to lay carpet with him.
It's just like a diamond where you're like.
That's who you want to lay carpet with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What? But it's like good, a diamond. Good, like, you'd like pick up the diamond and you'd be like, it's just a rock, and you throw it aside. But, you know, if someone just blew it off, you know, just blew it.
If somebody just blew it.
Oh, God.
If somebody just put the diamond in their mouth and wet it.
Oh, my God. So funny.
Shit.
All right. Back to AJ Burrow, who was a beloved fixture in the town of
a Café du Monde.
The town of Café du Monde, Louisiana. No, Huma is the town, H-O-U-M-A. I'm pretty sure they call it Huma, right? Huma, Louisiana, or Huma? I'm pretty sure.
Huma.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the place. Write us a note if we're wrong. Write us a note in the post. I was going to say a funny address, like 123 Eat My Shorts Drive. I'm sorry. Anyway, so yeah.
Write to me, Stick Stickly. 305-960 New York City, New York State, 10108.
So the whole town loved this guy. I said that five times. He would help anybody who needed help. He would take the shirt off the back of a person and give it to another person. That's how that's the saying, right?
Yeah. Take the shirt off my back and then put me in your mouth and dust me off.
He apparently battled a drinking problem that led to the end of his marriage, but he had been sober for like, I think around 8 years at the time that this happened.
It was 8 years.
And almost every night he was at the Easy Does It Club, which was a club for sobriety. And he was available as a sponsor day or night. They didn't call it sponsor, but you know, he was always trying to help out fellow people trying to better themselves. And yeah, he seemed like a great dude. August 28th of 1991, he left the club around 8:30 p.m. He stopped at a convenience store to get some milk, and he said that he was headed home. He told the lady who in the reenactment knew his name that he was headed home. He lived with one of his daughters, and he never arrived home. The end. That's pretty –
he went missing. They don't know what happened to him. But we get these stories from these people.
Next, his car, they find his car abandoned across the street from the club, which is weird because someone saw him leave, you know, and someone saw him at another place. All three daughters showed up to where his car was found, and they pretty much, they thought everything was weird. They were like, this is for sure dad's car.
And there's a body in the trunk. Yeah. I just know it. I know his body.
Yeah, they thought it was in the trunk.
Look at one of those daughters. Like, she was just like, he's dead. His body's in the trunk. Like, I get why they could immediately jump to something like that, you know, just because it's so odd that his dad would be missing. Their dad would be missing.
And they watch a lot of true crime on Lifetime.
Yeah. The big true crime boom of 1980.
We're going to watch a murder show. Murder show.
We're going to watch a murder show. Yeah, the 1991 true crime boom. Well, I mean, it probably was. It started and ended with Unsolved Mysteries and America's Most Wanted.
Most Wanted, yep.
So a couple days later on the 30th, this guy who said he had known AJ since he was 7 ran into him when he was walking into another convenience store. And he said that AJ looked disheveled and had clothes that didn't fit and his hair was messed up. And he described AJ as somebody that he had never – like he'd never seen one hair out of place is, I think, literally what he said.
Yeah.
He also noticed a small red car.
With three gentlemen in it.
Yeah, a compact car, really, really small one. And once he came back out of the store, AJ and the car were gone, completely disappeared. Another witness was in front of his house getting the mail when he saw the same car drive by with AJ in the back seat. And he waved at AJ, and AJ didn't wave back at all. And he thought that was pretty odd because Mr. Bro is a very friendly fellow.
So that's interesting, right? Two different people who, with the same similar, like three men, red car.
Yeah, they were sure it was this guy. It was sure it was AJ. And then this weird note gets sent to like the police station. And the note reads, it's so fucking stupid. It makes no sense. AJ Burrow was drunk at the time. Self-inflicted gunshot wound. Stomach, drawstring cotton sack, put in by friend. Rolled over, steep grassy bayou bank near dam. Signed, Helene. It's just weird that it's like, why can't you write in complete sentences? Like,
yeah, that is weird.
Probably because they're drunk and barely could keep conscious and why would enough you, to write broken up words.
Why would you write your name? Eventually they decided that whole thing is fake. But
fake. Yeah, that was debunked.
I don't know. I feel like there's some middle ground in between, you know, in between that note and the truth. I don't know. It's a strange aspect to the case. Another strange aspect is on September 28th when this lady, Christy, was sitting on her porch. She said that this weird van drove up and down the street a couple times before it stopped in front of her house, and a disheveled, homeless-looking man who smelled of booze got out. And this man tried to sell her frozen fish, which she declined. She's like, I don't need your frozen fish. And he said, okay, very nicely, said, thanks anyway. And then he turned around and gave her a last smile, and she said that smile triggered something in her head, and she was like, I think this guy is a missing person.
I know this guy.
And then so she goes to the police, tells them this, and they show her a bunch of pictures, and she recognizes the younger picture of him more than the more recent picture, but she also says that he was older, but he was just skinny like he was in this younger picture, so maybe he just fell off the wagon and has a van and fish. I don't know. Or could he, you know, he didn't have that distinct of a look, you know, kind of a skinny, tall, white guy with a pointy nose. Like, it's not, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that none of these were him.
Yeah, it very well could be.
I got to give him props on this reenactment actor because he did highly resemble this man.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. The crew, the casting director, props.
Yeah, for sure.
So we don't have an update on this guy, right?
No, nobody knows. The last thing that the episode leaves us with is this golf course maintenance guy who was in the same parking lot where the car was found. And he said he saw some men forcing another man into a white car, I think. Yeah, but nothing ever came out of that.
Yeah, so this guy's still presumably missing.
Yeah, August 28th of 1991 was the last time anybody ever saw him. And yeah, very much unsolved. So what do we think? Probably fell off the wagon and just died a John Doe somewhere in a ditch.
Probably. I mean, I'm assuming.
It's really sad, yeah. That's my best guess.
I mean, using the facts that we have in front of us, that's all we got, so.
Yep.
I mean, that's the more logical answer to this situation. Right. As sad as it is.
Those three guys were his drinking buddies?
That's a good ending to the, yeah, maybe they were just like, come on, like the old times. Or it was like something like these guys showed up, they just got out of prison. It's like, you owe us one for that thing that we did. It's like a Raising Arizona situation.
Shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, it looks like Harry Dean Stanton could have played him in a movie in the
80s. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. That's the actor I was thinking about, too. I do know who this is.
Well, actually, maybe even a younger Harry Dean, maybe like 70s Harry Dean would have played him because he was always kind of old. Yeah, so good episode.
Yeah, that's exactly the dad from 16 Candles. Is it 16 Candles? It is. No, Is it Pretty in Pink?
Harry Dean Stanton?
Yeah, he's the dad in Pretty in Pink.
I did not know that.
Yep.
I'm more familiar from his work with famous directors such as the guy who made Paris, Texas, and David Lynch. Yeah. I don't know. He's in a lot of movies.
He is, but that's exactly what I thought of. Exactly.
Yeah, because he's kind of that, yeah, the nose and the face. Mm-hmm. Like, he recently passed away. So good. He actually starred in a movie that was supposed to be really good, like a couple of years ago. It was kind of a swan song, people said. Because he never really got to star in things. He was always character actor, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, he's also in Christine, which is one of my favorite movies.
Anyways, next week we're just talking about a POW veteran who supposedly went missing.
That's it?
Yep. Apparently, that's the only update we get after this episode. They're celebrating Veterans Day, I believe.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We'll be back to stack it up for you. Hope everybody's having a lovely, safe spring break. I guess it's sort of spring break time. Whatever. Close enough.
It's getting there.
Keep your masks on. Hold on a little longer.
Time to put away my leather jackets, huh, Dan?
Hang in there, guys. And we can all do a 7,700-way kiss.
I like that.
After COVID's over. Yeah, thanks. I've been David Howell. Thanks, Dan. Dan Benavides.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thanks, Eli Dominguez. Thanks for shaking your rocky drink and gulping extra loud for us.
Oh, you know me. Dan, David always edits all that stuff out, but I'm the worst.
Oh, God. Not all of it, but yeah, I tried.
Chewing, okay. Swallowing. Anyway. I got a big tongue.
You know what they say about big tongue? For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you.
Good night, Godspeed.
Adios, bucko. Yeah.
Adios, motherfuckers.